Second case of the day for argument is United States against D. Kemper. Mr. Sesson.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Gilbert Cisson, and I represent the appellant, Joseph D. Kemper, in the instant case. In the short time that I have, Your Honors, our briefs did submit four issues for review. I would like to focus on two of those, and of course, if it pleases the Court, any other questions you might have on the other two. But we'd like to focus on the first two. Number one, the validity of the special condition of probation imposed on Mr. D. Kemper's wife, Margaret D. Kemper. And number two, whether or not the facts of the case required Judge Murphy to recuse himself pursuant to 28 U.S.C. 455. With respect to the first issue, Your Honor, Judge Murphy imposed a special condition of probation which we believe violated Mr. D. Kemper's fundamental rights of marriage as recognized as a fundamental interest of this Court, as recognized by the Supreme Court in the Zablowski case. 18 U.S.C. 3563, Your Honor.
Mr. Sisson, I don't understand how we can reach this. The condition is imposed in a judgment of a third party, and I gather that not only did Mr. D. Kemper never intervene in that case, but he never filed a notice of appeal from it. And without a notice of without a timely notice of appeal from the judgment imposing that condition, we have no authority to change it, no matter what we might think of it.
Well, Your Honor, our research, unfortunately, was not able to uncover a case similar to this.
But the proposition that a court of appeals can alter or affect only judgments from which a timely notice of appeal has been filed are pretty clear, right? Suppose there is some civil case that might affect you, say an in rem case about the ownership to your house, right? It certainly affects you. But if you don't file a timely notice of appeal from the judgment that affects you, the fact that you could have gotten appellate review if you'd filed the notice of appeal doesn't entitle you to appellate review.
Well, unfortunately, Judge, the only person that was in the position to file a notice of appeal was Mrs. D. Kemper.
No, that's not true. Your client could have attempted to intervene in that case. The normal way in which you get review of a judgment, if you think a judgment in somebody else's case can adversely affect you, first, you intervene in the case, and second, if there is an adverse decision, you file a notice of appeal.
Well, unfortunately,
if you don't take both of those steps, nothing can happen.
Well, unfortunately, that was not done in this case, and I guess we erroneously proceeded under the presumption that because the interest affected Mr. D. Kemper, that indeed we could raise it on appeal.
No, the interest,
his sentence.
The fact that a judgment affects you is usually given as a reason to intervene, not as a reason to just ignore all of the procedures that go with getting review of other judgments. But let's put all that to one side. I don't understand how this affects your client. Your client is going to prison for 10 years. And the fact that your client's spouse can't see you for 18 months doesn't affect the fact that your client is in prison.
Well, Your Honor, and this is not in the record, but first of all, it's a marriage. The marriage had lasted for 37 years. As a matter of fact, with my knowledge of Mr. D. Kemper visiting him, as I often did in Clinton County, Mrs. D. Kemper visited him on a regular basis while he was incarcerated during the pendency of these proceedings.
Has she expressed any desire to visit him while he's in prison?
I have not been in contact with Mrs. D. Kemper or her attorney.
But in order to know whether your client has, even if he'd intervened and even if he'd appealed, to know whether your client could get anywhere, you would need to have, at a minimum, a declaration from Mrs. D. Kemper that if this part of the judgment is vacated, I will visit him in prison.
Well, Judge, I don't think we necessarily need that. I think the thing is here.
Otherwise, I can't see how you have even Article III standing.
Well, I think we do have Article III standing. I mean, there is an injury in fact. The injury in fact is to the relationship of the marriage, and a judgment by this court will remedy that.
If the wife doesn't plan to visit him, there will be no effect at all that I can see.
But we won't know that unless the restriction is removed and she's given
the
option.
No, we can know that if she tells us.
Well,
this is one of the problems. This is one of the reasons why courts don't allow litigation about other people's judgments.
Well, Judge, all I can tell you is that, you know, if you look at the transcripts from Mrs. DeKemper's sentencing hearing, Judge Murphy gives a very specific order. I don't want you to see that man ever. Never. The words never is specifically used. And as a matter of fact, she says if she violates that condition, she will go to jail. And so she got a break on her guideline sentence. I believe her guideline sentence was 41 to 51 months.
That's actually a different problem. If the district judge had believed that he could not impose this condition, his alternative was to send Mrs. DeKemper to prison. And, of course, then she certainly wouldn't be visiting him. They would be sent to different prisons, and they would not be visiting each other.
That is correct. And that is the crux of our case here. It seems Judge Murphy in the sentencing says, I don't believe Mrs. DeKemper. I'm sorry.
You know, I don't want to consume all of your time. You'll want to get to your next argument. But one of the problems, one of the rules that we follow is if we vacate any part of a criminal judgment, we vacate the whole judgment and send it back for the district court to impose a new sentence, new lawful sentence, adequate to his sentencing goals in light of the vacator. And one of the consequences of that is that we would send Mrs. DeKemper's sentence back and Judge Murphy could send her to prison.
That is correct.
One reason why we won't allow this appeal. But this appeal, in principle, could lead to Mrs. DeKemper going to jail.
I don't think it would, because based on the comments of Judge Murphy, that it seems that obviously Mr. DeKemper was the more culpable party, and it was at the behest of Mr. DeKemper that Margaret DeKemper committed the crime.
I suggest you move on to your next argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the recusal issue, let me first state that we did bring issues under 455A and 455B. We will readily concede, Your Honor, in light of the circuit mandatory authority in this circuit, that a review under 455A is only accomplished through a writ of mandamus. Unfortunately, a motion for recusal was not filed, and therefore a 455A claim is not proper before this court. However, we don't want to waive it because we know that there is a circuit split of authority on this issue. As a matter of fact, the 10th and the 9th circuits have acknowledged that notwithstanding the bringing of a, even though the defendant does not bring such a motion in the trial court, it still is proper for review first time on appeal. So I would indulge the court to not waive this issue, as I might seek en banc review of this issue, obviously, if the panel decides against me on that point.
You would first have to make some demonstration that recusal would be in order.
Yes, Your Honor.
You need to discuss Leitecki.
Yes, Your
in
Honor.
Particular.
I am familiar with the Supreme Court's pronouncement that judicial rulings in and of themselves are almost never grounds for recusal of this issue. I mean, for recusal of this nature. But the court did note in Litke that aside from the judicial rulings, that doesn't include the comments and the surrounding circumstances made by the judge, which we have a plethora of here. And if we look at Litke's citation of the Berger case, we can see that even though it is a high threshold, I will grant you that, Your Honor, I believe it has been met here. Whether the judgment should have been impaired, whether there is such antagonism to make fair judgment impossible. And if we look at the two sentencing hearings, we start from the first with Margaret DeKemper's sentencing, where he says that he simply imploded, we'll get to him at a later time. And he noted that if that had been his daughter before the court, he would have shot him, or the daughter would have shot him. And it wasn't a boast. He basically said this was an overbearing, ignorant man. And she also noted in Joseph DeKemper's sentencing hearing, he noted twice. He basically said, again, he brought up the notion that in today's society, he would have been shot, and society would have been saved from these proceedings. That's what he said in the transcript in page 30 of our appendix. He also noted that he caused that sweet soul to go to prison, and it doesn't speak much for this defendant. He also noted that his children did not see anything good or worthwhile in him. And the most troubling aspect of it, Your Honor, is he noted that one of the reasons he kept Mrs. DeKemper away from him is because he didn't want her to be abused anymore. The record is devoid of any evidence whatsoever that Mr. DeKemper abused Mrs. DeKemper in any form, way, or fashion. Now, if we look at the Berger case, where Judge Landis was basically recused because of his comments regarding German Americans in an anti-espionage trial. He made three very specific comments. He said, number one, their hearts are reeking with disloyalty. Number two, that these German Americans would come to the United States and seek the protection to avoid war. And number three, he compared it to a safe blower. I would rather have a safe blower than that man before my court. I think there are obviously some distinctions, Your Honor. Number one, he's talking about nationality, and number two is in a situation of war. I see my time has expired, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Sisson.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Hudson.
May it please the Court, Jennifer Hudson, Assistant United States Attorney. I'd like to address counsel's second issue regarding the recusal issue. The Leidecke case that the Court drew counsel's attention to, I think, really is instructive in this particular instance. The Court said that judges are allowed to dislike, even vehemently dislike, litigants as long as it's based on the evidence before it and as long as fair judgment is still possible. Clearly, in this instance, Judge Murphy has made a distinction in his own mind based upon the evidence before him, separating two individuals who were farmers and filed for bankruptcy. Mrs. DeKemper he saw as an individual who was manipulated by her husband. Mr. DeKemper, he found, was the leader organizer and had an extensive criminal organization in place. There are facts in the case that support these findings. In Mrs. DeKemper's sentencing that I believe is contained in counsel's appendix, there is notation that during the course of the bankruptcy proceedings, when Mrs. DeKemper does in fact lie to the bankruptcy judge, she stops and Mr. DeKemper gives the answer, which Mrs. DeKemper then reasserts. It is the district court's opinion based upon the what he said in total, that Mr. DeKemper wielded mental influence over Mrs. DeKemper, that he is the individual who is more culpable, while his language is certainly colorful. What he is indicating at Mrs. DeKemper's sentencing is that he has to look at the era in which she was born and brought up, that she was born in an era where women obeyed their husbands, where their word was law, and then stating that my daughter was raised in a different time and that this would not happen, I expect she would have shot him. And then again at Mr. DeKemper's sentencing, again explaining the era in which Mrs. DeKemper was raised, he doesn't just say shot, he says shot or taken to the police. And thus we wouldn't have the case we're here in front of us today. The language is certainly colorful, but not outside of the language permissible when a judge is vehemently disliking of a litigant.
So is it your position that it's never a basis for recusal if the prejudice, if you will, whatever we're calling it, arises from the facts of the case? It's never, not almost never, never.
No, it's that
so
is
what,
not.
So what does it take to get it over the line?
What it takes is an indication that there is I believe the language is deep-seated antagonism, where there cannot be any type of fair judgment. What I would point to in this case, which separates it, there are two items specifically. The court, during questioning of myself during the sentencing hearing, asks if there are aggravating factors that exist that would allow him to sentence the defendant to the full maximum term of 20 years. The court didn't do that. If fair judgment was not available, or if fair judgment was absent in Judge Murphy's mind, why didn't he sentence him to the 20 years? The other fact that I would point to is that Mr. DeKemper's sentencing range was the maximum 121 months. I understand we're talking about 1 month, but that was the government's recommendation to the court at sentencing was 121. The court made it an even 10 years. It seems that while that's still 1 month, there is some exercising of discretion on the court's part not to simply take it out on Mr. DeKemper. Furthermore, I think what the Berger case shows from the German-American aspect is the judge in that instance had an unfavorable opinion of German Americans from the outset. And what was at issue was, would he be able to put that aside? And his language was, it would take a very impartial jurist to be able to put it aside, and I think that they stink, in essence. This judge doesn't say, from the day Mr. DeKemper walked in my door, I was going to get him. I knew he was the more culpable. What he did is he listened to the facts as they were presented to him and formed an opinion that Mrs. DeKemper was certainly following the lead of her overbearing husband, and he called it like it was. Again, very colorful language, but nothing that would cause the court to have to sua sponte recuse itself. I would also like to point out that it would be a sua sponte recusal. The defendant, Mr. DeKemper, did not object at the trial court stage. Mr. DeKemper, during the course of the sentencing hearing, acknowledged that he was aware that his wife's sentencing had taken place, and specifically the condition had existed that she not be allowed to see him. Had he believed, and I believe in his brief states that, sure, we're on some notice, but really it crystallizes at the end of my sentencing when he repeats it. But he's on notice at the time that his sentencing occurs that this judge doesn't like him. And if he truly believed that this was an issue that needed to be raised, he should have done so at that point, and he did not do so. So
could he have filed a request for recusal, a motion for recusal, during the sentencing hearing?
I believe he could have requested a continuance, but if you look at the dates of the sentencing, Mrs. DeKemper's sentencing predated Mr. DeKemper's sentencing by more than a month. So there was certainly time for that motion to be filed, and it was not. If there aren't any further questions, I ask.
I guess that doesn't answer my question. Could he still raise it during the hearing itself?
I suppose he could have requested the court's leave to do that, or at least noted on the record that he desired to but was not unable to. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I ask that the district court's judgment be affirmed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. And, Mr. Sisson, we thank you for your...